According to the Ethnic and Racial Studies Journal in the U.S., Asian Americans have the highest percentage of college grads of any minority group. And though they represent just 6% of the U.S. population, they account for 20% of Ivy League students. But once they enter the workforce, it's a different story. When climbing the career ladder at work, many of them say that they hit a so-called bamboo ceiling. Bamboo ceiling? just the term itself, depends on how you interpret it, can be a little bit racial. Anyhow, let's look at the details of this apparent discrepancy.
So according to Los Angeles Times, while Asian Americans graduate from college at higher rates than white Americans, despite this educational advantage, they're less likely than whites to hold professional and managerial jobs. This is true even for U.S.-born Asians with immigrant parents, or the so-called second generation. Also, the Times analyzed graduation rates among the largest Asian groups in the United States: Chinese, Indians, Filipinos, Vietnamese, and Koreans. Together, these groups account for about 33% of the country's Asian population, and found that all five groups were more likely to have graduated from college than white Americans. So the rate is much higher. Chinese are 6 times more likely to have a bachelor's than whites, and Indians are 8 times more likely, even after adjusted for age and region in the country. Koreans and Vietnamese are almost 3 times more likely to have graduated college than whites, while Filipinos are twice as likely. So there's a clear difference here in education. And also, this type of advantage, or this competitive advantage, disappears once people start working. Despite being more likely to graduate from college than whites, Indians and Koreans are no more likely to have a professional or managerial job. Vietnamese and Filipinos are less likely to have this opportunity as well. And, you know, I feel like when I went home last year during the summer, I actually grew up with a lot of Filipinos. I mean, they were a lot of my close friends growing up. And a buddy of mine lives in San Francisco, actually. And he's been working for this tech company, or I'm not sure exactly the name of the company, but he's been there for 7 to 8 years and hasn't been promoted yet. And it's really frustrating for him, because he, you know, since I seen him last, he's already started a family, got married, and, you know, he's in San Francisco, which is probably one of the most expensive places to live in the country. And he's been trying to, you know, promote for many years. And apparently in his company, you know, it's the same for a lot of the other guys that were, well, I hate to say it, but like, if they're, you know, the non-white guys, you know, that he works with some Vietnamese as well. And it's the same story. Like, you know, these guys are constantly turned down for these managerial positions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, 8 years is a long time. I mean, you know, there's typically like programs where you can do some like training, like management training programs. And once you've completed some of these tasks or these classes, companies are supposed to promote you. But it hasn't happened for him yet. So he's actually looking to move out of San Francisco and go somewhere else, because it's just, well, it's too expensive to live. And on what he's getting, it's, you know, he's not really going anywhere. So that ceiling, I'm not sure if I'd call it bamboo, but it, you know,
there's
definitely a ceiling. So I guess it's something that hits home for me. And it's not, I sound a bit callous, but there's a long history with this, you know, especially for, you know, people who of color in the United States. So it's, yeah, the ceiling is, you know, is there's bamboo ceilings, there's black ceilings, there's lots of them, you know, mm-hmm. So it's just an unfortunate reality that a lot of us have to deal with in the U.S.
I think this is definitely one of those topics for people living in China. I'd be very interested to know, because, of course, I mean, when you're a multicultural society, or like America, for example, that's known to be the melting pot, and almost a cliche as we use in describing what the U.S. stands for, or what we associate with the country. This is, race is always a bit of a touchy subject. And the problem here is, for Asian Americans who have worked so hard at school and have obtained really good degrees. And in school, you don't feel it that badly because there's one criterion, that is, if you get straight A's, it proves yourself, right? But once you join the workforce, apparently there's a whole bunch of subjective factors that also affects whether this person gets promoted or not. And when you don't have that one clear measurement, things become a bit tricky. And let's look at Huang Shan here about this competitive edge that apparently just kind of disappears for these academically high achieved people in the labor market.
Yeah, because even being more likely to graduate from college than white, Indians and Koreans, they are no more likely to have a professional or managerial job. Vietnamese and Filipinos are less likely to have a professional job than whites. Moreover, despite a tremendous educational advantage over African Americans, Vietnamese and Filipinos do not have a better chance of being in a professional or managerial position than African American workers. But the lucky thing is, the only Asian group that maintains their advantage once they enter the labor market is the second-generation Chinese Americans. So this group is 1.5 times more likely than whites to be in a professional or managerial position after controlling for age, gender, education, and region of the country.
Really?
I think it depends on your major. I know Asian Chinese Americans, they work really well in engineer subjects and also in some work related to IT. But I think for people who study communication or media, it's really hard for them to break into the mainstream.
This is really interesting. I wish there were more studies or more accurate studies about what's actually going on and trying to break down these things for us. But why do you think that this educational advantage is so short-lived, so to speak? Because for Asians, especially, I can speak for Chinese people or at least the general sentiment. That is, families usually put so much of the family's money, parents' attention, and emphasis on children's education. My parents started saving up for my education after, maybe even before I was born, because they wanted the best education for me. And they did deliver that for me. Thank you, Mom and Dad. but I don't work in the U.S. I will feel really, really bad if I, after obtaining all the top degrees, working my socks off that way, but it doesn't translate in the workforce. But yeah, let's talk about this then, about this academic advantage, but short-lived.
Yeah, I think ironically, if we want to dig out what reasons lead to this bamboo ceiling, it's actually the stereotype. What benefit Chinese or Asian Americans in the educational domain actually hurt them in the workplace. Because then there's a stereotype of Asian Americans and being very smart in school, and also they may be hardworking and very competent. But in return, like in the workplace, people may think they're less vocal, less assertive, and lacking in social skills. And because I think usually the second generation Chinese or Asian Americans, they have been encouraged by their parents to study hard, because usually I think the first generation Chinese Americans, they were involved in some intensive labor works. They were being left out from the mainstream, so they want their kids to improve their career and improve their education to climb up the social ladder in the United States. So they always invest a lot in the kids' education. And also these Asian Americans, they want to, you know, stand out. What can you do? You have to work really hard to crack people's stereotype. And that's why they could be really excellent in universities. But afterwards, maybe due to some stereotypes and also maybe to some extent, there's discrimination, and it's really hard for them to climb the workplace ladder. So sometimes people say it's easy for them to get a job, but just get a job. If you want further promotion, it's the other thing.
Yeah, and that's again, that's kind of what my my buddy was telling me when I went home, and it's just it's really tough, you know. And a lot of the guys that are getting the promotions are, yeah, I mean, guys that don't necessarily have the, you know, the amount of experience, you know, they have the same credentials, but yeah, they're just they're white guys, so, you know, and it's, they get the job, you know, and yeah. It's really straightforward. And you know, America has a long history with this type of discrimination, and I mean, I can understand why people would say that, you know, there's some stereotypes that are involved, but it's just, you know, there's a lot of racism in the history. You know, I mean, for example, you know, in the 14th Amendment of the United States, you know, said that, you know, black people were considered 3/5 of a human being, you know? Mm-hmm. So when you have stuff like this, and then you have laws that were set up after the Civil War to keep people of color, you know, marginalized and really, you know, difficult to advance. These were called Jim Crow laws, you know, that took place in, you know, in the late 1800s. But, you know, and it's a lot of people may feel like, oh, well, that was a long time ago. But this is, you know, part of the country. It's part of the, I guess you could say, culture, the history, and a lot of the old thinking is still there, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's this feeling of a threat, you know, someone of color coming in and saying, you know, have higher education, you know, and may in a lot of cases may even have higher ability or better ability. And, you know, so there's this fear that, you know, mm-hmm. should we recruit so many into, you know, the managerial and executive positions? I mean, I was reading on The Atlantic that during like 2005 and to about 2011, there were like 12 Latinos and 13 people of Asian descent that were promoted to CEOs in Fortune 500 companies. And mind you, this is a relatively small number considering how many companies are there. And there were about 13 Latino CEOs in 2008. And then again in 2015, the number of CEOs of Asian descent peaked at 2011 at about 14. And during this time, I think there were like 7 or 8 black CEOs. But the numbers are pretty standard. They don't get much higher than that. And the trends toward diversity later stalled out and then reversed as CEOs who broke racial glass ceilings retired or removed. Their ranks were replenished primarily by white men, returning to the, you know, the country's corporate leadership to an earlier status quo. So this is, you know, it's there are campaigns to break these glass ceilings. And I feel like, you know, like affirmative action, there's a lot of flack about it, mm-hmm. especially with the, you know, the college admissions. You know, there was a big thing with Harvard.
Yeah.
You know, and
we talked on the show. As
right.
Well.
You know, and there's a lot of advocates for it and against it, you know, and of course, against it, meaning, you know, we should remove these I guess you could say restrictions where it's only focused on scores, you know, but the biggest advocates to eliminate affirmative action are really just trying to get rid of, you know, seeing things in a different way where you're looking at a whole person perspective when it comes to college admission. And I think that it's a good system, but of course you have individuals who will take something good and, you know, manipulate it and use it in a bad way. For example, like, you know, saying rating Asians as, you know, on the likability scale, they'll give mm-hmm. them a lower score, or, you know, just to keep, it's a way, it's a crutch to, you know, to keep some people out. So it's just, you know, there's a long list of things. I mean, I know we don't have so much time on the show to go over it, but it's just my stance on it is it's a very racial society, and that's really the bottom line. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you talk to anyone who lives there and has to compete in this, you know, market for, or this fierce, you know, competition for management in the States, it's really hard, you
yeah,
know,
it's
tough. It's
yeah.
a tough, something, you know, it's difficult to swallow that. It
yeah.
really is.
I totally understand that. And there's so much irony here. Tony, you mentioned the Harvard situation and also affirmative action, the more recent case that was lodged, I think, last year, and we discussed on the show as well. It was actually spearheaded on the surface by Asian Americans.
On the surface, yeah.
Yeah, because Asian Americans, a few of them saying that, hey, I have such a high score and I also have done all the extracurriculum stuff that makes me stand out, but I didn't get in. And
And the irony here is, even if without, let's say, affirmative action or whatever restriction, and this person gets into Harvard, well, look at after you graduate, huh?
Yeah.
In the workplace. So there's just so much irony there. And it's just really, and it's a really hard thing for people to swallow if this was really the reason. But the problem is, you can't pinpoint it,
yeah, it's,
right?
It's invisible, you know, in the working environment. You know, if you're passed over for a role, it could easily be, oh, well, you don't have enough experience. You know, you don't have the training hours. I mean, there's a long list of things that can be brought up. And, you know, so it's really difficult to justify. You can't really go to court. And if you do raise up these issues, it kind of alienates you in the work environment.
Definitely.
So, and then, of course, your chances of promoting at that point.
But that's not right, though. Definitely, it's not right. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And also, what Huang Shan mentioned earlier was quite, I think, interesting in the eyes of an Asian person, I suppose, is that there's a lot of cultural misunderstanding as well when maybe sometimes Asian people are seen to be quieter and also deferral to authority. And in school, yeah, because you follow teacher's orders and you work hard and you do your studying. But in the workplace, if you're being quiet, well, also respectful, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And a deferral towards your boss. And and apparently those kind of qualities are often not seen as positive features in a person in the American workplace. That's the part that I wonder. Do they want really loud and assertive people all the time? What about the qualities in being respectful and doing your job kind of thing?
I think that is the model employees to, you know, be able to handle tasks that are given and, you know, not make up, you know, kick up a big stink about it and be too aggressive. You know, there is some assertiveness. I think assertiveness and aggressiveness are different. You know, I mean, you have to be a bit forthcoming with people, and I don't feel that Asian people don't possess that. You know, it's just, again, I maybe I'm biased. I think it's solely off of, again, your ethnicity, and that's really the bottom line here. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, other ways that you can look at it. You know, I mean, you know, that these Asian people may not be assertive, or, you know, they could link it to confidence. I mean, but yeah. I really don't think that's the case. I mean, at least from the people that I've met in my life. Yeah, I mean, when you have a track record of, you know, excelling in school, and if you work at the same job that other people work, I mean, there's a certain amount of confidence that comes from that. So this quiet and meek student demeanor that, you know, they portray, I think it's a bit misplaced.
Also, there's something very tricky about this confidence thing, or at least what's projected as confidence when you're being loud and you stand up and speak your opinion. Because you have to be so comfortable that you can take up that time and space. And that's not something that I think everybody feels entitled to. And maybe that is part of racism or the environment you're brought up in. I don't know if I've explained myself clearly here. Because if you're brought up in that environment that your opinion counts, then you feel more comfortably to be loud and say, this is what I think, and boss, what you say, I don't think is correct. Or say it in a nicer way kind of thing.
But I think another way is, I base our traditional values, we have been taught to be humble and modest.
Yeah.
So sometimes even I accomplish a really amazing task or project, I have been taught to play a low key. But in terms of my employer, maybe for American employers, they will think, wow, you don't know how to advertise yourself. You don't know how to promote yourself. Because for your maybe American peers, even they did a very little job, they're trying to advertise themselves, trying to exaggerate what they have done, because that's a part of the strategy in the workplace to help you get a promotion chance. And also, I think there are another thing is sometimes employers, they have higher expectations for Asian Americans. Sometimes they require you to graduate from Ivy League schools, maybe for your white peers, they only need to graduate from a decent school, that's fine. No need to be an Ivy League school. And also sometimes I think they will define like your personalities as lack of charisma, lack of confidence, they think, oh, maybe you're a good worker or good employee, but you're not good enough to be a leader or manager. And also sometimes we lack such an Asian role model in the workplace. And this is like a vicious circle. If there's no Asian managers in the team, they can't help you, the other Asian employees, to break your stereotype against Asians. So you need such a role model. Maybe that's a reason why I think many of my Chinese American friends are so excited about Andrew Yang is going to run for the nomination of Democrats and to join the 2020 presidential campaign, election campaign. So we need such a role model so much to tell people that, oh, Asians can be cool, can be awesome.
Well, there's no doubt that Asians are cool and awesome. But yes, I agree that representation is very important in politics and in companies. It's essential because it gives the other people from that group somewhere to aspire to. And unfortunately, there is a lack of representation for a lot of different groups in the United States. And it's something that's pretty constant. It's been going on for quite some time. You mentioned earlier about marketability, and I'm not sure if Asians are not good at marketing themselves. I think that it's not a matter of exaggerating one's ability, but being able to, I guess, focus on what you're good at and bring it to the forefront when you are, well, trying to get a job. And again, I don't know if it's I guess the Asians that I met growing up, they didn't have these stereotypical behaviors of being shy and not being able to market themselves. I think a lot of my friends were able to speak very well and were able to, they were always the leaders in certain groups and school, but in the work environment, I guess it's a little bit different as we talked about earlier. So it's not, these personality flaws that we are discussing. I think today they may be a little bit displaced. Maybe these are some of the older stereotypes that I don't exactly feel that they hold up today. Mm-hmm. Again, it's still, for me, it's down to race.
Yeah, well, what about breaking this bamboo ceiling or making cracks through it? Where do we go in terms of progress?
That's a beautiful question, and I really think that it's a different way of thinking. One thing I envy about some of these Ivy League schools is they train a lot of people to be business minded, in that they train you to go out and make a job as opposed to go out there and get in line to work for a company. So I think that if these measures are not being met, if people are not being treated fairly and they're not able to work and be promoted in the fashion that they should, take your abilities and your skills and get, link up with your people and start your own businesses and just really turn inward and really reach out to your communities. And I think if we all did that, it would make a big statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes people say maybe just train yourself to be more white. But I think instead of that, I think you should try to learn to leverage your cultures and values rather than hiding it and trying to make full use of it.
And also, I think, make a fuss of it. Because these days, saying those words, making yourself heard, can actually make a difference. Sometimes.
Sometimes.
You're listening to Roundtable.